To Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Now joined by my co-host, Canucks Insider, also covering the team for The Athletic, Thomas Drance. What's up, Drance?
Oh, not much, but now my day is made.
Now I get to say two what's ups the show. I start the show off with one, and then I'm like, ooh, I get to do another one with Drance.
That was a little bit too joyful. That was like when they give me an extra McChicken at the drive-thru window. I'm like, now I get to eat two.
Hey, man, it's the little things in life. You got to find those things that get you through life.
Like a second like McChicken an extra McChicken sandwich. Yeah, unbelievable. Now we're cooking.
The lottery right there.
The sun is shining. You used to have to, like, May hockey. I was thinking about this the other day. The one game that the Vancouver Canucks lost in the 2011 Western Conference Final series against the Sharks was on my birthday, way back in 2011. I was turning, what, 24? I had hair. It was a weird time. And all I wanted was to watch the game, obviously, on my actual birthday. So I, like, rented one of those, you know, plush poker tables and had all my buddies over. And we put on the game, and it was wildly disappointing, and I also think I lost my shirt. and I was like, yay, exactly what I wanted. But that was May 20th. You had to, like, be in the conference final to play hockey on my birthday historically. You know, now this series could end on, like, the Game 7 could be May 20th. It feels too nice for the outside.
For the second round to be happening?
For the second round. This season's going a little long.
Yeah.
But man, well, is the hockey good.
I know your guy Pierre LeBrun has been on this for
He's like, right.
And he's 100%
right. He's right. Yeah. It's wild. It's wild that we're only just about to start the second round. And it's like not even early May anymore. We're like more than a week into May.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm thrilled that game day has arrived. I'm thrilled to watch this matchup. And last night, those two games really got me amped up.
Well, I said off the top of the show, like, let's hope this series can live up to the round two vibes established in large part last night, because that was awesome. That was super, super fun.
Unbelievable hockey, man. I thought so first of all, everyone's now writing off the Hurricanes. They've lost 2-1 goal games. I think the Rangers offense is so efficient that they're in trouble. Don't get me wrong, but they still haven't lost on home ice.
Mm-hmm.
We could absolutely be going back to MSG for game five in 5 days and it'll be level. And then, man, I cannot believe how scary the Avalanche are once they get galloping.
Unreal.
What a great game.
We'll start the crossover momentarily, but Benny from the Mox texts in, it could always be worse, Drance. I ended up waking up in jail on my 24th birthday. So I appreciate the kind words there. Benny from the Mox, the encouragement. It was better than Benny from the Mox's 24th birthday.
At the end of the day, watching, you know, at the time, my favorite team, because I was a huge fan, lose, and also spending time with my buddies losing money. Like, those are, frankly, two of my favorite things.
There you go.
I don't know what else to say.
All right, as it is every time this week, it is now time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal, our pals from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. You can watch their show 10 to noon, Monday to Friday. The crossover is brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles, and where the playoffs players go. Excuse me. I was saying playoffs because I'm so excited. Round two of the playoffs starting tonight. I can't believe the Canucks have only played one game since we last talked to you guys. They've only played game six since we talked to you guys last week. I mean, how excited are you to finally get this series going against the Oilers tonight?
Well, everybody I've talked to, and I'm sure the same with you, are saying the same thing. Like, come on, let's get it going.
Because
that was, you know, say what you want. Maybe you expected the Canucks to do away with the Predators earlier, but it was fun. And you guys just nailed it. Those games last night were so tremendous. Oh. If this comes anywhere near that, let's get her going. People can't wait. It's just been great.
Well, first round two game in Vancouver in 13 years. This fan base deserves this, and I keep talking about this fan base and what they've gone through in the last 10 years. For sure, not a lot of good hockey to watch. And, you know, this year, no one predicted them. Even the president came out and said at the beginning of the season, everything would have to go right just to make the playoffs. And here we are in round two. Never mind, just make the playoffs. You know, we're in round two. And this fan base that has suffered for so long, they're going to enjoy it tonight.
Yeah, I've got a couple of you. I've got three kids, and they're experiencing this for the first time. They're around in 2011, but they don't remember it.
Right.
And it's like, when's the next game? They can't wait. And it's been so long for so many people. So many people don't remember 2011 amongst the youngsters. It's just, you know, like I say, people can't wait for another playoff game, and it starts tonight and every second day after that.
The vibes are immaculate walking around the city. I can't believe how many people I've seen in jerseys just in walking on the seawall to the rink and then walking here.
Your point about the kids, Don, I know, dropping my kid off at school, like on the playground, tons of Canucks jerseys. Like a lot of people who've never had a chance to experience something like this before, you can tell getting on the bandwagon, getting amped for this series.
Huge for the brand. Rick, I just want to ask you, what, in your view, and this is a tribute to your shirt, are the key limes to this series?
The key what? I didn't hear you, Thomas.
The keys.
You have to repeat that about four times.
My wire cut out. My wire cut out here. Hold on a sec.
It's a problem when you get older. Key limes.
The key limes. Hold on a sec. Well, obviously, it's the top six battle is where it's going to be. Who's got McDavid? We all think it's going to be Miller. Lindholm up against Draisaitl. But I do believe the Canucks centermen in the bottom six have an opportunity to win those matchups. The Canucks are much deeper at the center ice position than Edmonton. And if it's Pettersson up against McLeod, and if Pettersson's he's got an opportunity here. I know a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, an $11.6 million player is your third line center. Well, I don't really care about the salary right now. He's got an opportunity to win that third line center matchup, and also Bluger, I'm going to give the lead over Carrick. So in the bottom six, the Canucks have an opportunity. I feel they're better at center in the bottom six than Edmonton is. There's the key matchups. But as you guys, we all know, if you can somehow not let McDavid and Draisaitl go off, that's the key. And I know nobody wants to hear that the Canucks were 4-0 against Edmonton in the regular season, and three of the games were early. I get it. But you know what? Those two did not go off against Vancouver in the regular season. In fact, they only scored 7 goals in 4 games against the Canucks. And I know it's a brand new season, and I know it's the playoffs are different, and they scored 22 goals in 5 games against a defensive-minded LA team, 9 on the power play, should have been 11 guys. Two Kings were just about to come out, and they basically had their foot on the ice. It should have been 11 power play goals. But hey, guess what? This is a juggernaut. It's a great team. It's going to be a great series. But I also give the Canucks blue line. I give the edge to the Canucks blue line over the Edmonton blue line. And Donnie, we were talking about Zadorov, the size, holding players accountability at the blue line with their heads down. I think Zadorov could be a really big key in this series.
Well, I think the four big defensemen for the Canucks versus McDavid and Draisaitl.
Keep going.
But versus McDavid and Draisaitl, you can frustrate Draisaitl. We've seen that. Not necessarily lately, but I like that combination from a Canuck point of view. I think it's going to be a little closer than people think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what you're suggesting, Rick, is that even if at the, you know, the whipped cream topping and the filling might be more delicious for Edmonton, the crumble at the bottom of the pie is where you give the Canucks the edge.
Are you on a chef
trying to hammer home the key lime situation.
Still thinking
here.
About
is
key
it
lime
lunchtime
pie?
And you're thinking of food?
Thinking of your shirt. Your
it
shirt makes me want a slice of pie.
Who's that famous chef, the guy with the show, Donnie?
There's a lot.
Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, you think you're Gordon Ramsay
right
now?
Robert Irvine.
Yeah.
Donnie, I'm impressed you got that. Who's the chef with the show? And you nailed it and won. That was good. That was impressive.
I had a big run of watching Restaurant Impossible with Robert Irvine for a long time. Makes a mean protein bar.
I love Gordon Ramsay. I've watched his show for years. I think that guy's splendid.
Couldn't come up with his name, but you watched it for years.
Now that you gave me the name.
I'm a big Chopped guy, personally. Love Chopped.
Oh, yeah, so good.
I enjoy Chopped.
The best.
Yeah, Chopped. I don't watch a lot of cooking shows, but if I did, it would be Chopped. Anyways, game one here between the Canucks and the Oilers. And, you know, you were talking about Elias Pettersson. I think you're absolutely right, Rick. He needs to get going. He needs to have a big say on this series. You know, the other thing I'm curious to see, and, you know, Donnie, you mentioned the big four defensemen on the back end. Yeah, they need to play well, but I think we need to see a lot of Quinn Hughes in this series. With the offensive ability he has, the ability to control the pace of play, I think the Canucks are going to need Quinn Hughes to be better than he was against Nashville, although I thought he played really well in games 5 and 6. I think they're just going to need to play him more, too, against the Oilers if they want to control this series.
I guess it depends on game situations, obviously. But if he has the puck and he's capable of having the puck a whole lot, that means McDavid and Draisaitl won't have the puck.
Exactly.
That's a pretty good formula. It's kind of, you know, I have a hard time. I'm a little off the subject here. That happens. More on key lime pies later. But I have a hard time calling those large defensemen on the Canucks the big four, because literally they are the big four, but it almost sounds disrespectful to Hronek and Hughes to refer to them that way. But I think people know what we're talking about. I'm off on a tangent. I apologize.
Well, we are always off on tangents as a quartet, so I don't think any of us get to take the moral high ground. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, gentlemen, because I agree. I think the Canucks have a real path to pushing this series long, and if they do, those whistles go away. Yeah. And that'll serve to partially neuter the Oilers' power play, which is their biggest edge in the series, in my view. And, you know, I could see this being a nail-biter, despite what the betting markets and the projection models and all the experts are saying about it. And yet, I'm struck by the fact that when I think about how this Canucks team looked against Nashville, frankly, how they looked for the last 2.5 months of the regular season, it feels kind of stunning, but I almost have this contradictory sense, and I'm curious to get you guys to react to this. This contradictory sense that this team's here with an amazing opportunity ahead of them, and an opportunity that I think they have a path toward, and yet I feel like I haven't come away from too many Canucks games being like, wow, what a performance in months.
You know, it's funny you say that. In our inbox today, we had two or three submissions saying exactly that. Yeah, they were good in the first round, but when's the last time they played a game where they absolutely blew you away? Now, having said that, as I go back in time, 2011 against Nashville, all six of those games were one-goal games, with the exception of one, which included an empty net goal, and they managed to get on to the Stanley Cup final. But I'm with you, Thomas, in that I think that there's more there with the Canucks. Maybe it starts with EP 40. I'm not sure, but I just think there's more there with this team. I agree with you.
Did you see the Andrew Burnett comment yesterday, guys?
I did. That
he felt Nashville was a better team. Yeah, he felt Nashville was a better team in round one.
Why didn't we have that in our show today?
The Henderson, he didn't. I told Henderson he didn't play it. Listen, he felt that Nashville was the better team, and they shouldn't have advanced, or they should have advanced, and the Canucks shouldn't have advanced, right? So when a coach comes out and says that, that's a pretty damning statement for sure. But listen, I want to get to the power play thing, Thomas, you mentioned. The Oilers drew 9 more penalties than Los Angeles. Canucks didn't draw a lot of penalties. Yep. They got to do a better job drawing penalties. They only drew 13 against Nashville. Nashville had 21 power plays. Same thing. If they go, the Kings gave Edmonton average 4 power play per game. You can't do that. If they're going to give the Oilers 4 power plays per game, the series is going to be over quickly. They got to stay out of the box, but they got to do a better job of drawing penalties. Because I'm going to tell you, they almost averaged 2 power play goals per game against the Kings. Almost. That's pretty significant. So they got to draw more penalties, which they didn't do in the first round, and they got to stay out of the box against these guys.
Well, and this is where, you know, like the advantage of the size on Vancouver's blue line, we all know what it is, keeping everyone to the outside. But we also know that, you know, even though he only took 1 minor penalty in the series, like Tyler Myers can be a little bit penalty prone. Nikita Zadorov, 4 minor penalties in the series. Even Teddy Bluger, 3 minor penalties in the series. So this team's going to need to be far more disciplined. Even Hughes Hronek took 8 combined penalty minutes, so four combined minors over the course of that first round. Like, they need to they need to make sure that there's none of those stick infractions and that they're not giving the they're not putting the officials in that moment where you have to make a snap judgment call, you know? Because that happened too frequently against Nashville, even though I don't think they were, like, undisciplined, quote-unquote, over the course of that series. What did you make, Rick, about Tockett's commentary today about, like, I thought it was really interesting because it felt to me like it was out of nowhere. I don't know of any of our colleagues, anyway, who sort of took Pettersson's absence from practice on Tuesday for illness, as the club called it, and suggested that that was in any way dishonest, but Tockett really out of nowhere, just sort of blasting the idea. Like, I know people are speculating that we're not being forthright about Pettersson. We don't lie. People are saying he's got a broken back, a broken wrist. Like, it's not like that. What do you make of that commentary from Tockett? What was he getting at today in terms of Pettersson and his status?
Yeah, we were talking about it on the show, Donnie and I, and very surprised. Came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Nobody implied yesterday that he wasn't sick.
Not
we
that
had
I
all
saw.
Heard it was a head cold. Nobody ever, and we have not even on our show, have said he's injured. We've just said that we're just hearing he's not 100%, which is there's a ton of guys in that dressing room not 100%. This is the hardest trophy to win. And every time a team, go do yourselves a favor. Every time a team in the NHL playoffs is eliminated, go look at the list of injuries. Guys playing hurt. Guys playing this guy. There's always 8 or 9 or 10 guys that are playing hurt in the playoffs. And the Canucks are no different. Are you going to tell me, honestly, that entire dressing room is 100% healthy? I don't think so. We never implied Pettersson was injured. We just had heard that he is not 100%. And so, yeah, we just caught us off guard where he was going with that. And we never implied yesterday that he was injured. We knew he had a head cold. So I don't know where that came from.
Well, the way I read it, and you could read what Tucker had to say a million ways, and Lord knows I could be wrong, Rick could be wrong, but it was almost like he was saying to me that he missed yesterday's practice because of the head cold or, you know, he was under the weather and it wasn't an injury. Now, he might be injured, but that wasn't why he missed practice yesterday.
Yeah.
He might be hurting. So that's the way I read it. I just have a hard time believing I'm seeing the same player. I have a hard time believing he isn't hurting in some way.
Yeah.
But my take on it, I'll repeat myself, was that he was talking about why he missed yesterday's practice.
I agree with you.
And had way more to do with the head cold versus some sort of injury.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially because, I mean, Tyler Myers missed a game with illness, right? So it's not as if, like, why would people question it? There's an illness going around.
Tockett missed a morning skate.
Missed a morning skate. Like, it's a pretty easy fact pattern to
Luke
buy
Chen.
Into. So I don't really understand that side of it. But I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, game one here and Rick Tockett is talking about Elias Pettersson in some pretty charged terms, right? And, you know, Drance made the point, when was the last time the Canucks really blew a team out of the water? You guys are hearing that from your listeners. And I do wonder how much of that comes down to not getting the best version of Elias Pettersson in the Nashville series or in the final part of the regular season. Like, is this a team that's really equipped to dominate other teams without Elias Pettersson playing at a high level? And to be fair, I think you can look at that question two ways going into this series, right? On the one hand, you can kind of say, well, if they get the same Elias Pettersson, it's going to be really, really tough against Edmonton. But we also know that Elias Pettersson can be so much better, right? And if we get that better version of Elias Pettersson all of a sudden, I think this team could look a lot different than they have for, you know, the last two and a half months here.
It just seems so simple. And, you know, we've all played or been involved in minor hockey. And the one thing you tell kids all the time, hey, move your feet. If that's and Rick Tockett keeps talking about that. I mentioned it with Dakota Joshua yesterday as well, but he keeps talking about that, hammering it home with Elias Pettersson. Move your feet. If the injury or whatever is bothering him is not serious, the fix seems just so simple for a guy at the NHL level. Move your feet, like most successful players do, like you did, Elias Pettersson, 4 or 5 months ago. It just, if he can just get there and remember to move his feet, or not even remember, just make it, you know, part of his normal routine, then maybe he gets back to being the player that got himself an $11.6 million a year contract.
Yeah, I mean, and even this season, as he drew a ton of criticism, like, his production is better than Jack Eichel's career high. You know, like, we know this is a special player. If he's 100% and performing like this, I'm almost more concerned than if he were battling through something, to be totally honest with you, gentlemen. All right. We got to do it. Right?
Thomas, let me ask you. If it comes out after the Canucks season that he was injured or not 100%, will that change your perception of Pettersson?
Well, I am already baking that in. I think what would change my perception, Rick, is if it comes out after the season that he was 100%. You see what I'm saying? Like, I'm already assuming that he's one of many players at this time of year that are battling through something or other.
I think the nature of the injury matters too, right? Like, Rick, you made the point. A lot of guys have bumps and bruises. If it's that type of thing, is that really sufficient to excuse a pretty bad performance, right? But if it's something significantly more serious, then it changes the conversation.
And hopefully that bad performance doesn't continue, right? Because, Rick, I think, was quite right to point out Pettersson versus McLeod, that has to go in Vancouver's favor if it looks like it did against Nashville. But Pettersson versus Sissons went firmly in Nashville's favor. They still managed to advance, but McLeod Sissons, yeah. I mean, that's there's not McLeod's faster. McLeod's a more dangerous offensive threat. So, if he's at the level that he was in the last series, I don't think we can take that to the bank necessarily. He's going to need to be better. Just like I think this entire Canucks team is going to need to perform better than they did against the Predators if they're going to keep this story going. Sorry, Donnie.
If we do find out that there is no problem. Look who I work with. I'm used to that. if we do find out that there's something wrong with Pettersson, then it's not Pettersson who comes under fire. It's the organization, because the question will be asked: why wasn't he rested like Besser was before the season?
In the Winnipeg game.
Look where he is right now in the postseason.
So, day of the start of the series.
Yes.
Can we make playoff picks? You okay with this?
Yeah. Do we want to? Is there a Demko update you want to get in, or should we make some series picks here? I just don't want to cut you off if you have anything on Demko.
No Demko update. Just they're taking it day by day, and they're hoping late in the series it's a possibility. They really are, and let's see if late in the series he can get there. But no update.
So we're gonna make some picks.
Yeah, are you guys comfortable with that? You wanna make your series picks?
Sure.
Start with Donnie.
Why are you pointing at me? Why can't you go first?
You go first.
Right. That was like the scene in the what is it? The three.
I don't know.
Famous slapstick comedy.
Three Amigos.
No, Oh my goodness. The Three Stooges.
The Three Stooges.
The Three Stooges, where it's like they're being talked to by the general, and it's like,
Thomas, I'm worried about you. You couldn't come up with the Three Stooges?
Man, they are so
and
much
are
before
you saying
my time.
You've got four in front of you right now.
Are you saying Donnie and I are two of the Three Stooges?
I'm saying you volunteered Donnie like that scene where there's a general who's like, who wants to enlist? And two of them step back and the other guy has to go to war. A classic bit of slapstick
classic
comedy.
Classic bit from the Three Stooges.
All right, Donnie, sorry. Rick has volunteered you like the Three Stooges. You go.
I will go Oilers in seven, and the surprising part about that is I pick Oilers in seven, meaning the Canucks would lose game seven on home ice.
Painful. But
I think it's going to be tough.
Oilers in six. As much as everybody in this city is – some people talk like this is going to be four games, like four straight. The Canucks are going to surprise a lot of people. We had Ken Holland on yesterday. When the GM of the Edmonton Oilers – comes on our show and says it's going to be a long, hard-fought series. That's pretty impressive when the other GM says that. I think it's Oilers in six.
Drance?
You go.
No, you.
What do you mean?
Fine. Oh, well, typical negative.
He's doing a Dolly Wall.
Typical negative, Donnie and Dolly over there not picking the Canucks to advance. The theme of my playoff picks this year has been trying to manifest the result I want the most. So I'm going to go Canucks in seven.
Wow.
Classic series. Canucks get it done in seven on home ice against the Oilers, and they keep the playoff run going.
I'm going to go Oilers in six.
Well, okay, here. The other reason is we can't all pick Oilers in
six. Well, we all can.
Someone's got to mix it up here. I'm willing to go out on the limb and, take those bullets for likely getting it wrong and pick the Canucks in seven.
I want to go Oilers in six, but I want to suggest to you, gentlemen, I don't know how well you remember Dallas Seattle last playoffs, but it was like a seven-game series and no game was close. Like, there wasn't a single close game. It was like, Dallas wins 7-2. Kraken wins 6-3. Dallas wins 5-1. I don't know why, but I with a battle makes fights sort of perspective on this series, I feel like when the Canucks are able to impose their style of game on this series, they're going to win, and it's going to be 3-1. It's going to be 4-1. Like, they're going to win decisively. But I think the sort of other side of the coin will also play, where the Oilers are going to have some games where they're able to, you know, score on the power play and do some of the fancy stuff that they like to do, especially at the net front. I just think it's going to be one of those interesting ones where the styles almost don't mesh. And so you're going to get some games dictated decisively by one team and some games dictated decisively by the other team. But the Canucks are going to be at a high enough level to dictate several games in this series. And I won't be shocked if they sneak it out.
All right, there you go. Everyone hates the Canucks except me.
As entertaining as yesterday.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's hope for that more than anything.
That's right.
Mostly I want a long series, a long, fun series more than anything else.
I'll be key lime sour if we don't get an entertaining series.
Ooh, yeah. Keep hammering that, Thomas. It'll work one of these days.
Yeah, one of these days it'll be worth it. The juice will be worth the squeeze.
One of these days Rick will get it.
You guys want me to citrus this one out?
Thomas.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Thomas, better than the quit cackling and let me get a word in edgewise. Better than the Three Stooges was Abbott and Costello. Donnie, you remember them, right?
Yeah, except there was two of them.
He should have used Abbott and Costello because there's two of us.
Well, I was more of a Marx Brothers guy myself.
But, I was making a specific reference. Anyway.
All right, fellas.
This hit has gone longer than the life of Pi.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this. We'll let you go. Get that parking meter taken care of. We'll talk next week.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
That is Don nice Taylor and Rick Dollywall from Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV. Check them out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Czech TV. Of course, the crossover brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles and where the players go. I just don't want to, like, I knew you were probably going to pick the Oilers, not because you're, like, negative or whatever, just because that's probably the smart pick. Let's be honest.
Now I understand what you're trying to do.
But I was like, I don't want us to all be lockstep.
What?
That's why I was like, okay, let everyone else pick the Oilers, and then I'll ride in on my white horse being like, no, the Canucks.
So I think the problem was is that we were thinking of it the same way. I was going to do the same thing.
If I pick the Oilers?
Well, I just assumed you were going to pick the Oilers, so I was like, no, let me do the bet. And that's why I was trying to punt it to you.
Okay.
So yeah, we were literally trying to do the same thing, and I guess we should just, like, talk a little more before we go on.
That's actually so funny. That's actually so funny.
Because for me, Oilers in six is the same thing. Like, Oilers 6, Canucks 7. One of those two.
Right.
I think it's going to be I think there's going to be thin margins in this series. I don't, you know, if I pick the road team in 6, I'm not picking them to win decisively. Right? I'm picking it to be
a close series.
A nervy series where there are moments of stress where it could absolutely go either way and where bounces will ultimately determine it. So, you know, I think it's going to be close.
Protect your home with Westside Pest Control. They have the tools and know how to eliminate your wasp problem. Don't live in fear. Visit westsidepestcontrol.com. We'll be back with more here. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet on the other side. Jason Bukala joins us at 1 o'clock. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We're going to hear from Rick Tocchet here momentarily, but first, I got to tell everyone about McDonald's McHappy Day 2024, which is today. We already gave the McChicken a plug earlier in the show, but today is McHappy Day, a one-day fundraiser organized by McDonald's Canada, where a portion of proceeds from all food and beverage menu items go to Ronald McDonald House Canada and other local children's charities. Funds raised on McHappy Day go directly towards providing essential support to families staying with RMHC across Canada, including accommodations, food, mental health and wellness support, and so much more while their child is receiving medical treatment. And I know I've had family members who have used Ronald McDonald House. It's a big deal. It makes a huge difference when you really need it. How you can support? Pretty easy. Every purchase all day on Wednesday, May 8th, goes to support those families with sick children. Guests can purchase McHappy Day socks for $5 in four different designs, either in-restaurant, at the drive-thru, or via the McDonald's app. And hey, if you can't get to McDonald's today, you can still donate to Ronald McDonald House Canada by visiting rmhc.ca/donate to make a direct donation. To learn more about Ronald McDonald House Canada, visit www.rmhc.ca. All right, now I want some McDonald's, but while I think about that, let's hear from
Canucks, two McChickens.
From Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. Oh, Dom gave me the 1 second signal there.
Coming up
soon. Should we just have dead air?
No,
while
let's
we wait?
Vamp. Let's vamp.
Let's vamp.
Coming up soon.
Rick. Any moment here, we will hear from the one and only. You know him, you love him. Jack Adams nominee. What?
Oh, okay. Burley froze.
Forget
Burley
the
Burley froze.
We'll just
sad.
We'll just kill time. It's easy. You got this. Rag the puck, baby.
No, I'll be fine. Okay. So I started off the show talking about like early tells. You know what I mean? Like, because we're talking about the script. So what are those like early signs that the script is either going for the Canucks or potentially against the Canucks that we can kind of take away right away from game one early in this series?
Well, the Oilers are a pretty different team come playoff time, right? I think this is a team, you know, I describe them as being a team that can, you know, screw around and then find out sometimes,
mm-hmm.
right? Earlier this week. And I think that's true more so in the regular season than
can
in the
you
playoffs.
Tell us who your goalie is?
I'm going to talk to Clark at 6 p.m.
Sounds like I guess we're ready to go.
What do you think? We can play the Rick Tocchet audio?
Let's make our point now, though.
Okay. Let Drance finish, then we'll get into it.
So, but certainly with what we saw against the Kings, right? And the Kings are another lockdown systems team, highly disciplined, want to frustrate you. Probably not as quick on adjustments. Like, obviously, you'd rather have Tocchet than Hiller, I think, behind the bench.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I still think there's similarities, stylistic similarities between what the Oilers saw in round one and what they're about to see in Vancouver tonight. And the way, especially early on in the series, that they like stormed the battlements, right? Like they were all over the Kings, took
yep.
it to them with serious intent. And I think that's the thing to watch for tonight. Like how dialed in are the Oilers in terms of trying to control play? And for me, the tell that things are beginning to go the Canucks way or that you were in the game script that the Canucks you know, that favors the Canucks is that it looks kind of like game 80 did during the regular season where Edmonton's going to come out and we know what they're going to try and do. And we know that they have this unmatchably high gear at the top of their lineup, right? You'll hear Rick Tocchet shortly say, aside from Colorado, I mean, the way that they can play at the top of their lineup, it's unbelievable. If they come out and the Canucks are able to limit the damage and either score first against the grain or end the first period, and Edmonton's territorial play hasn't translated into like a significant lead. It's 1-1, maybe it's 1-0, but the Canucks have like a couple late scoring chances
yep.
and show some signs of life. I think that's sort of what you're looking for. Although I really do think for this Canucks team, scoring first
oh,
is like
huge,
essential.
Yes,
essential, because then they can get to their game.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like when are they most comfortable playing Canucks hockey? It's when they're leading.
Yeah.
So they need to play Canucks hockey to do that easier. They need to score first.
So to me, that's it. That's like the Oilers are going to throw a big punch right off the hop. I'm pretty confident about that. The question is, can the Canucks take it as opposed to having the glass jaw going down and then get to their hockey by taking a relatively early lead, probably off something against the grain, maybe like a Sam Lafferty goal or, you know, hopefully like a Pettersson goal or just like something against the grain
yep.
that puts you in the driver's seat and lets you get to, you know, that forecheck with that neutral zone wedge, with that zone time that the Canucks do so well. And you know, I think can do especially well against a team that's not the fastest on the back end.
Maybe off the rush, too, against Stuart Skinner, right? Like, if you can get those rush opportunities, as Woodley mentioned yesterday on the show. Okay, now let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. Here he is.
Can you tell us who your goalie is?
I'm going to talk to Clark at 6 p.m.
No, no.
It's Seeloff tonight. It's Seeloff.
What about Petey? I know you guys had a bit of a flu running through the building. Is it any concern?
No, I think he's fine. I think he's fine. You know, I know some people are speculating we're hiding an injury. He had illness. We don't lie here. So for you guys that want to make it some, he's got a broken wrist or a broken back. He doesn't. He's just a little sick. So that's it.
How much more do you need from him offensively?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously this is a big series. You know, there's eight teams left. You know, he's a big factor for us. You know, hopefully, you know, especially at home, we'll get him in some good situations on the ice. So hopefully he can take advantage of it.
Rick, you've had a chance to examine what Edmonton does so well. What's the biggest challenge for your team going into this series?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously, you know, not to build them up too much because they're a hell of a team. They got some, there's some strengths that they have that we have to make sure that we're clean on. They're very good at attacking. They're good. They're one of the better teams that's taking the puck to the net. Like, they're underrated when it comes to, everybody talks about star power and this tic-tac-toes, but to me, the net front for them on offensively, I think they're one of the best teams at getting there. Not just, I mean, Hyman's one of the best. Even Connor, even Perry, like, they have a lot of guys that hang around the net and go to the net when you beat pressure. So we got to be really stingy in front of our net.
So this Edmonton team has a lot of playoff experience. It's kind of seen that they've had enough experience now. It's their time to go for it. The rest of the NHL kind of looked at the Canucks this year as a team that maybe they just get this playoff experience. Is that, that's not the way you guys look at it, though, is it?
No, I don't feel like, well, you know, I've heard it before. Well, they got to go through the losing for that. Like, I don't believe in that. I think, you know, those six games against Nashville, it was a tough series. You know, whether we tried hard, and Nashville's a good team. And, you know, we won. So I think we're going into this situation the same thing where, you know, playoff experience, I think a guy like Hoglander, I thought his game, from the first game to the sixth game, that's good experience for him. I think that's going to help him for this series, being more calmer and playing his game. So that's experience right there. So, you know, that's the way I look at it.
Is there something frustrating or motivating about being seen as the underdog going into this series, even though you guys finished first in the Pacific?
No, I don't care whether people pick or not. I mean, that's the business we're in. I was on the other side. You know, people ask your opinion, but I think if we felt we were at the start of the year underdogs and we're not this and that, I don't think we'd be in the position we are. I think guys, you know, came into the season like, hey, we're a good hockey team, and that's the way we approach it. Like, we don't approach it to start, hey, we're underdogs, nobody expects to make the playoffs. I don't think I heard any of our players say that in training camp.
Rick, what's the confidence level in the penalty kill after what you guys did in the first series, and especially with the...
We make sure if we get a puck, we got to get it down, knock off 25 seconds on their power play. But, yeah, the confidence is there. I think we're a confident group.
There's been a lot of talk about structure in the system, and all that applies to the penalty kill, I guess, as well. But I'm curious, with the way that the Oilers attack, is it more about hockey instincts and just changing up a couple things on the penalty kill against
them? I don't think they have a huge playbook. They're just good at what they do. So it's important that we know that what their looks are, where we want to be in these situations. Who do we want to have the puck in the less dangerous situation, because they're going to get their looks. And like I said, if you over pursue, they attack. They're one of the better, probably the best team in Colorado. If they beat pressure, they're taking it to the net. There's none of this like, oh, let's do this play and stuff. They play road hockey after that. Then they just take it to the net, or whoever's open, they give it to and they attack.
Rick, you've got 10 playoff newbies. One of the intangibles in the playoffs, one of the things you can't draw up on the whiteboard is not only when push comes to shove, but when so-called villains in the game accidentally, on purpose, maybe run your goalie or try to get under your guys. How can you guard against that as a coach? I mean, there's nothing you can go to the playbook for, but it is an intangible part of postseason play. How do you prepare for that?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, every game, every playoff game you play, you gain experience. You know, you figure it out. Obviously, the coach staff has to help the players, but there's certain times where it just organically happens. You know, some players that are really experienced have tricks of the trade. Hopefully, some of our guys learn from that, and you better be a fast learner. That's the way you got to look at it.
Rick, you're going to have last change games one and two. How do you approach or think about matching up with Connor, knowing, of course, that it's not just going to be on one center?
Yeah, I don't think it's one line. I think it's a committee. You know, obviously the D too. I don't think you can just say, hey, it's this line. I think there's going to be a multiple of lines that have to do the job against him and Drysdale. Their depths the last couple of years, they can score too. They're good too. So, you know, it's a committee thing. It's awareness, it's puck management, it's all that stuff. But each line, you might have a different line against them. And we have the same message.
Both of these teams are constructed with a ton of size on the back end.
Yeah.
How does that impact your thinking about what to expect stylistically in this series?
we're not we're not a pretty group in the sense, but we defend really well, and that's our bread and butter. But that doesn't mean we sit back. You know, we're not going to play a 1-4 against these guys. We're not just going to, you know, have three guys in front of that and block shots all night. You know, we want to be aggressive, but we watch a lot of video, and I like the way we defend. I really do. I think it's something that will help us against this team.
Rick, Nikita Zadorov was saying that when it comes to Artur Seelofs, it's not so much a matter of the defense giving him confidence, that he gives them confidence. What have you seen from him that's allowed him to give that kind of confidence in such a short amount of time?
Yeah, for me, is after the initial save, he's in position for the second save. That's my when I look at goalies, that's my, you know, if you look at the top goalies, you know, they make that initial save and you look and they're there for the second save. They're not on their back. They're not flipping and flopping. I think he's got that, you know, that knack of being there for the second save. That's what I think where the defense really, or the players really have confidence in him.
And then talking to people in Abbotsford yesterday, they were saying watching him, it's an example of not only like, hey, this is how you get to the NHL, but this is how you can be counted upon. Like, what do you think it does for an organization to go a little bit big picture of just to see how a guy like that can not only fit in, but it says like everybody plays a part, especially when you do need guys this time of the year?
Yeah, no, Patrick O'Leen talks about this all the time, or GM, about next man up. It's true. Who wouldn't have thought Artie, our third goalie, was going to play in the playoffs? It's funny, I was just talking to Niels Ullman. Like, you know, he's really worked hard. He's, you know, he's not playing, but he could play, and he's got to be ready. That's just the mentality. That's an organizational attitude. You know, you got to have, it's not poor as me or this guy's out. And I think the smell around, or the flavor around here is next man up. We don't like, oh, we don't have this. This guy's hurting or whatever. We just go, hey, next man up, let's go. I think you have to have that attitude if you want to go far.
Rick, do you think you'll have to score more in this series than you did against Nashville? Can you grind out the same kind of 2-1 games that you did four times as you did against the Preds?
Well, I don't know if 13 goals is going to get it done this series, but we're comfortable playing a 2-1 game. We are, and I think we've learned that over the year of being comfortable playing those games. You know, we talked about this as a group ad nauseum about if it's a low-event game, don't panic, it's okay. And I think that helps us, you know, in the playoffs. That definitely has helped us. We didn't panic, even though I think we had 12 or 13 shots that one game. We weren't looking at the shot clock in the third period. Like, we were like, oh, my God, we got to get shots on that. We were just like, hey, just move the game along, and you know, we have a chance, let's score.
And to that end, much has been made of the regular season. Does the late result in the regular season and the type of game that was, basically a 2-1 game with an empty netter, does it show you a blueprint at all, or is that tossed out the window because no McDavid and it's the playoffs?
I mean, whether it's McDavid, I don't take stock in these four. Listen, we need those 8 points to get to win the division. That's great, but it game at 7 o'clock means nothing. And our players say the same thing, you know. But playing those games has given some guys confidence to spring. You know, some guys had some good years. I think that first month of beating an Oilers team has helped the confidence of the group. But I don't think it helps anything right now. No, I don't.
You talk about what you guys can do. What's the checklist that you're looking for, you know, at the first intermission, at the second intermission? What are you looking for you guys to be doing?
Well, I'd like to hold pucks. I don't think we can throw pucks away, the number one. And I don't think we can just, like, talk about defense. Like, you know, we got to attack. You know, if Edmonton makes a mistake or, you know, we can't just send one forechecker and have four guys back. We got to press the envelope, but we just got to make sure that when there's separation plays that we're in good spots. But when there's battles, we need five in there. We don't need two guys and three guys back. You're not going to win that way against Edmonton.
And we've talked a lot about McDavid, but you've got a game breaker in Quinn Hughes. What's the challenge for him? What have you set in front of him for this series?
It's no different than them game planning him. You know, he's played well against Edmonton. He's had some really good looks against that team. So I'm sure, you know, when he's on the ice, you know, they got to be on guard. Maybe they can't be as aggressive, because if you're aggressive against Quinn, he'll make you pay. So it's no different than our attitude toward their players. We have a game breaker in ourselves.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet with his thoughts on this series and on game one tonight, starting at Rogers Arena. And, you know, a lot of similar themes touched on there from Rick Tocchet that we've heard over the last few days as we've all had a chance to really look ahead to this series. You know, obviously confirms that Archer Shelovs will start tonight. And, you know, talking about the matchup by committee against Connor McDavid, it's not just going to be JT Miller's job. You're probably eventually there's going to be other lines that find themselves on the ice with Connor McDavid as well. And then, you know, what I found most interesting towards the end there is just that emphasis on being aggressive. Don't be so scared of Edmonton's offensive firepower that you're only focused on avoiding mistakes, right? On being back in position in the right spot so they don't get a rush chance. They're going to have to commit resources. They're going to have an aggressive attacking mentality. As he said, you're not going to win that way being the super safe conservative way against Edmonton. There needs to be that level of aggression from the Canucks in this one too.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think the implication is that they weren't aggressive enough against Nashville?
I think a little bit. I think we heard that from him during the series,
yeah.
Right? That there were moments where if there had been another guy in the battle,
pucks.
Right?
Like yep.
That they would have maybe come up with a loose puck and been in a position to generate chances. I think that was a theme against Nashville.
Yeah, well, because, you know, at the end of the day, they beat Nashville, but it was like a high variance style of hockey. Okay. And what I mean by that is one shot decided it one way or the other time and time again. Now, if you're the Canucks and you're the variance Kings,
yep.
Maybe that's okay.
Like, yeah,
with,
great.
Maybe that's okay with you to some extent, but like if your kingdom is built on variance, it will eventually collapse. You know, like at some point you've got to be able to put your star players in a position to make the difference. Now, that said, against the Edmonton Oilers, as opposed to against the Nashville Predators, where you don't necessarily have the same edge in terms of elite talent, a high-variant series is like the script. That's what you want. You want as many games to be decided by one moment, one shot, one bounce, mm-hmm. as you can possibly find. So, you know, it's interesting that it's like, in order to set that up, maybe this team needs to turn the dial a bit. You know, they actually need to play more aggressive to impose that type of game state in a series and against a team as talented as Edmonton.
Well, and as Rick Tocchet also said, right, we're not afraid of low event hockey. We certainly saw that in the Nashville series. And I think they can do both things at once, right, is be aggressive with how you're forechecking, be aggressive with how you're pursuing the puck. But that doesn't necessarily mean just wildly firing shots from all over the place. You do that, and then you hold on to the puck, and then you turn it in to a low-event game because you're being aggressive to kind of impose your will on the team. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. Jason Buchla from Sportsnet, former NHL scout. He joins us next. We'll get his thoughts on this series between the Canucks and the Oilers right here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Just a young boy, I didn't stand a chance in.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber. Text line Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. We're going to get Jason Buchla on the phone here momentarily. I did see a friend of the show, of course, Ryan Clark, as well, was the only ESPN panelist to pick the Canucks to win this series. And I saw PJ, Patrick Johnson, a post-media tweet that, of course, Ryan Clark here to watch the games. And he was talking to Clark, and Clark has been overwhelmed by the positive response that he's gotten from Canucks fans for picking the Canucks against the Oilers. So I'm excited to chat with Ryan about that. But now joining us on the line from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout, he is our pal, Jason Buchla. Jason, how's it going?
Hey, fellas. I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. We're very, very excited to finally get this playoff series started.
Yeah. Seems like it's been forever waiting for this one to get going. I know it's but a little rest, a lot of travel in the first round. It's not going to hurt.
Books.
And more importantly, as Drancer recovered from Nash Vegas, I mean, that's even more important, right?
I did recover. The second time I went, I did literally nothing. I just was like in my hotel room working, grinding away.
Good.
But it's because I'd had 5 days earlier in Nashville, or 5 days in Nashville earlier in the week, and took full advantage of those. Hey, yeah. Hey, Books. I just want to start with a couple U18 questions as we wrap that up, and then we'll get into playoff talk. So, is there a chance we could be talking in 2 years about Gavin McKenna being a better prospect than Connor Bedard was at the same age?
Whoa.
I know, I'm throwing hot takes at you.
Yeah. Well, you know, considering what I've... everything goes in cycles in terms of the quality of the opponents and everything else. But I will say this, that absolutely... sooner than Bedard has he had a monstrous impact on the world stage. He was arguably the best player, the most complete player in that tournament outside of just points. I mean, him and Hagen's two underage players, right at the top of the table for scoring in the tournament. So, boy, oh boy, was it fun to watch him play, though, guys. Like, he was super elite. Number one overall in 2 years, I guess, is going to be a given. I heard a rumor on the street that Medicine Hat is going to try real hard in their cycle to host the Memorial Cup.
Ooh.
Shocker there when they're going to have some of these guys on the roster. What a special talent. Elite inside, in and out game, you know, like so quick to space. He literally had, I'm not joking when I tell you guys this, there was a couple of times where he took the puck. Imagine you're coming out of your zone and exit, and you're on the left, closer to the left hash, okay? So left side of the ice. And you come across the neutral zone working to the right wall. So now you're driving down the lane on the dots on the right side. There was a couple of times I literally watched four opponents try and chase him down. It was like something in pond hockey, you know, like or pickup hockey, like trying to chase him down to the flank as he drove to the net. Like it was... speed, skill, compete, quick release, net drive. I'll tell you this: so TJ Ginla had a hell of a tournament too. Like he goal and two assists in the gold medal game. It was that's an anomaly, for Team Canada to win that event. So
yeah.
it was fun to watch.
Well, so I want to follow up with a TJ Ginla hot take, because when I saw him play the game in which Kelowna eliminated Wenatchee in the WHL. So I was up there and watched him live, a month ago. And I was struck and could not shake how much his game reminded me of Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, heavier, though, I have to say. But you know what? The stature looks a lot the same, doesn't it? Like their bodies and when they're in motion and
yeah,
their catch and release.
Pettersson's longer, like he's a taller person.
Yeah.
But... It's the anticipation away from the puck. Like you don't look at either player and be like, that guy's going to be a monster forechecker. But the way they anticipate what opponents are going to do with the puck, they're just extraordinarily disruptive.
He is, you just hit it right on the head. So when you get into these types of players, they're elite hockey instincts on top of stature. And like, there's certain things that are a choice, right? So compete is a choice, obviously. You know, you're hoping that the players at a young age are dialed in with how to play the game properly, like with their hockey IQ planes out to be. And then the rest of it, their skill attributes. We've talked about this before, and that's where guys like this are super elite, right? Because not only does he have that, you know, outstanding release and, you know, pucks are on and off his stick, and he knows where to be on the ice to find quiet ice. Higginla's got understated playmaking ability too. And I say that with Pettersson as well. Like Pettersson, you know, when he's at his best is obviously ripping pucks from the plank and doing things, especially on the power play, but you know, he can also make plays, right? And Higginla's like that. So it's amazing. He's the biggest climber so far. Like I still have some work to do before the end of the year, but he's like number five on my draft list right now, which is right in the Montreal Canadiens wheelhouse. And wouldn't that be a fascinating fit for the Habs? I'm not saying they're going to draft him. I'm just saying that if I was in that war room having meetings this week, he'd be right in that range.
And, you know, Jason, I know you were on with Jeff Merrick earlier today, kind of talking about this wave of talent coming out of Western Canada. And obviously, you know, you look at Connor Bedard, generational prospect last year, Gavin McKenna on the horizon. But there's been so many top end talents drafted from Western Canada recently. You know, throw Tejas Ginla as a guy who could go high this year. What is leading to that kind of golden generation or that wave of talent from this part of the country?
Well, Landon DuPont's the next one, isn't he?
There you go.
So I honestly believe that Western Canada, with their academy schools that they have created out there and the league that they've created out there, the structure that they've put in place has benefited the athletes and their development a great deal. I think that across the board, there's still, like here in Ontario, for example, we, from a distance, and I'm not that far removed from it, but, and, you know, I'm still around enough minor hockey rinks for a variety of reasons. And there's so much infighting and I can do it better than you can do it type of nonsense that still goes on in Ontario. Quebec's a little bit, you know, they don't have the population. They have a nice AAA program. They have the prep school program. But out west, you know, these academies, what you're starting to create is, or what you're starting to see is the result of structure for an athlete where he's under the same roof, he's going to school, he's training, they're identifying areas of opportunity as they grow in, you know, because everybody grows at a different time, like how to properly train, how to become better skaters, how to more puck touch. It's like everything else, you know, we all hope we can be scratch golfers, but we never go to the range, right? So like, you got to go to the range, you got to hit balls. So it's the same for hockey players, so repetition. And I think we're seeing the result of it. I honestly do. And we need it in this country, guys. Like, I feel, and I'm interested to hear what you said. I said it on Merrick's show too, and I know I'm going to catch flack for it, but I feel that we win events, i.e. the World Juniors, or we expect to win events, almost by luck, almost. You know, like, oh, well, we just have the best players. Let's throw them all together and we're going to win. Well, it's not like that. Like, the U.S. model is outstanding. You see where it's gone and you see where it is. You see these players coming out of Sweden and Finland, and I would argue Germany, Switzerland, you know, go across the board. All of them, all these federations have club systems, have better structure, and that's what's going on in Western Canada, and we're seeing some results. So they should almost be a case study. Like, the Western Canada model right now should be a case study.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, I could go on about this, but we do have a playoff series to get into. Round two between the Canucks and the Oilers. Game one is tonight. You know, we've talked a lot about the Canucks being the underdogs in this series going up against the Oilers. What are some of the kind of big questions you have about this series and how it's going to play out?
Well, first things first, let's get it off our chest. Like, we need our best players. If I'm a Vancouver Canuck, you know, the Vancouver Canucks need their best players to be their best players. And, you know, let's start with Pettersson there. We need him to, if I'm the coaching staff, find the best version of himself. We're going to have to get. Now, I will say this. I think that this series, this opponent, benefits the way that he plays the game more than, you know, maybe the Nashville series did. Like, the Nashville series, You know, they really protected the house. They obviously had some bump to their game. Edmonton's got in and out bump, but you know, they've also got holes that you can expose because they love to score and they love, it's a track meet with these guys. So I'm hoping he's going to be a better version of himself and the team, the Canucks, they need him to be. Let's not sugarcoat it. The goaltending situation has been nothing short of fascinating. Are we going to be, you know, relying on, is this lightning in a bottle? Is this something that we can count on? I'm leaning that we can count on it. And the reason is that I've believed from October, November, since we've been talking, there's a process that's gone on in Vancouver. And it's boring. It's scout speak, but they have a process that they stick to. They don't, if they're down a goal, they stick to their process. If they're up a goal, they stick to their process. And it's like a next man up type of mentality. I think the coaches have put that in their heads and just pull the rope in the same direction, do your job. And, you know, and they do. So the goaltending though, you got to win the goaltending battle, and that one's going to be fascinating to see how it unfolds.
Books, with where Elias Pettersson's game has been, are you confident that Pettersson versus McLeod, if that's how these matchups, end up, right? So, like, let's say Hoglander, Pettersson, Mikheyev, head-to-head versus Holloway, McLeod, Perry. Which team gets the advantage if that's the H2H?
Vancouver. Vancouver gets the advantage. There are two reasons. Pace, because Perry plays the game a certain way. It's along the wall. It's out front the net. He can't track, right, the full 200 mm-hmm. feet. So the more you can keep a player like that in motion, chasing the play, the better off you're going to be as a line and as a five-man unit, by the way. Like, if you can get some late dart out of whoever the defense pairing is on the ice with that line, and you know you got Perry stuck as the last man on his own exit offensively, you're in a good spot. The other thing is Holloway, and Holloway is the bulldog on that line. McLeod is a burner; he's an in and out burner, but he's not a guy that really has genuinely enjoyed the heavy lifting, like the middle of the ice. When you watch McLeod play and you watch him play, like I've watched this kid forever, him and his brother, but coming through junior here in Ontario, it's like, oh buddy, please take the puck to the hole, like take it to the cage. You know what I mean? Like he gets the edge and stuff. And I think it's going to be the same way defensively. I think that you can outsmart him a bit, spin off him. He's going to be around though. He's going to be a little bit of a rat. He's always going to be maybe in your back pocket, but I'm not so sure that the detail is outstanding. So that's a nice matchup. I would definitely look to expose that if I were the Canucks.
With the other matchup, so we looked into it yesterday just for fun and found that 75 head-to-head minutes, Miller versus McDavid, the Oilers have outshot the Canucks 2-1, but the Canucks have outscored them 2-1. 6 goals for 3 goals against, 75 head-to-head minutes across the last 3 seasons, but the shots are like 60-30. So a fair bit of good fortune bounces, probably benefiting the Canucks in that head-to-head. Is there any concern from you that if you assign Miller to chase McDavid around all night, that it might neuter your ability to generate offense 5-on-5, given how reliant this team has been on that line to score?
Yeah, I think that is a concern. That's a really good point. So, you know, you almost have to, in your head, think of it this way. We know that McDavid is going to produce against us in the series. We know that. So you go into the series, it's like a given. Okay, this is the guy's the best player in the world. We know he's probably. So if you get so wrapped up in trying to just shut him totally down the entire time, it takes away some of your other skill attributes that you can present as obstacles for the opponent, i.e. Miller, you know, and his group, whoever's going to be playing in the matchup game. So I think that you have to, play the game to the best of your ability and not get completely engulfed in just shutting him down, because he's going to get his apples. He's probably going to score some goals. They're definitely, you know, listen, we got to stay out of the penalty box if I'm a Vancouver Canuck, right? Like the team has got to stay out of the box. That's a given. But listen, if you can get out of your zone quickly and track back up ice against that group, even McDavid's line, even if they load it up. And Henrik's been a little bit banged up, right? Like, so there's some moving parts in the Oilers lineup there. We'll see where it goes. But if you can beat them on your zone exit to the neutral zone, that's where guys like Miller, guys like Pettersson, I would even suggest guys like Lindholm, hopefully. Mihaev actually had a ton of scoring chances. I know he doesn't score, but I'm just trying to say over seven games, if you play fast enough, guys, you wear down your opponent a bit, right? And like their defense, they can be exposed back there, especially Bouchard. He's got the Bouch bomb and everything else, but let me tell you, you can expose him sometimes. He's a little laissez-faire with his decision-making. So I know this is a long-winded answer. What I'm trying to say is don't get down when it happens because it's bound to happen. Still make him chase you. Play to the best of your ability as well going north.
You know, you talked about maybe some of the vulnerabilities in the on the Edmonton blue line there. And the Canucks, and I think when they've played their best this season, their forecheck has been really good, really reliable, and has been kind of their best way to generate offense. We didn't see that as much against Nashville. Do you think that they'll be able to establish a bit more of a consistent forecheck against the Edmonton blue line?
I do. I just think that the DNA of the Oilers is different than Nashville. So Nashville had to play the game a certain way, and they did it really, really well. Like, I mean, it was, you know, Bruno, the Andrew Brunette was, you know, trying to convince them to, you know, buy into the pain, buy into the process, right? And Edmonton, they're not patient like that, guys. Like, they're not a team that's going to clog up the middle of the ice and take away, you know, all of these scoring chances. I would be very surprised to see Vancouver have the shot for statistics that they had in the first round against Edmonton. I think that Edmonton's going to give up more, but you got to take advantage because they're going to get some too. So it's going to be a different looking series that way. The buy-in as a group is different in Edmonton than it was in Nashville. You're talking about, you know, plumbers versus surgeons in the comparison.
How much do you think the Canucks can do to physically impose their will on the Edmonton Oilers, or maybe not even just physically impose their will, but get under their skin, maybe throw off their composure a little bit here, because it's such a fine line, right? You want to do that. You want to be taking it to them as much as you can. But as you said, you got to stay out of the box at all costs as well. But it's also hard for me to see them winning this series if they don't play on the edge a little bit and try to frustrate the Oilers that way.
Yeah, for sure. You don't want to give up any easy ice. And if you do give up some, you know, opportunities that look like they're going to be grade A, you're going to make life absolutely miserable on the Oilers trying to, you know, produce offense. And that sometimes comes at a cost, which might be a penalty, you know, to save a goal or save a grade A chance against, for example. So there's some guys though, like Draisaitl is, you know, an all-world talent. There's no doubt about it. But he's also lost his mind a few times in the last couple of years, you know, and it's he doesn't, you know, Pietrangelo aside, who almost took his arm off in a series, like, you know, Draisaitl can be, he doesn't sometimes play the game very fast. He's very creative in his, picking his spots. The more you get under his skin, the more he's not going to be moving his feet because it's going to get in his head, and that's important. Bouchard's the same. Like, I'm going to tell you right now, if I am going through the neutral zone and they clog an opportunity up to have a direct entry, two things. Skinner's a left-shot goaltender. Bouchard plays the right side for the most part. So what am I going to do? I'm going to dump that puck in. I'm not going to go hard rim where Skinner can play it behind the net on his forehand side. I'm chipping that to Skinner's backhand side of the ice in that quadrant so he can't get out and play a puck. And guess what? I'm making life absolutely miserable on getting to that area ahead of players like Bouchard on the back end, because the more I bump him and the more I got, you know, he hears footsteps in the back of his brain, if you will, he's going to be less effective moving pucks out of their zone. So that's a guy. And then, you know, they got some other guys like Desharnais, who's, I really like Desharnais, love his size, love his length. But again, let's challenge these guys, get pucks into areas where we're on our horse and they have to defend us physically down low.
What's your gut? What are you picking for this series in terms of an outcome here, Books? Putting you on the spot.
You know, I've been all Edmonton for most of the year. I have to go Edmonton here. I'm going to go Edmonton, and it's going to be a 7-game series.
Ooh.
But here's the thing, and which is really going to stink because, you know, home ice and all that. But I don't feel great about it. I'm really sitting on the fence. And I'm not just saying that because, like, I'm not kissing your ass, fellas. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm here to tell you that I don't feel great about betting against the Canucks because anybody who's stuck with process and that underdog type of mentality the entire year is really hard to bet against. But Edmonton's a little bit more seasoned for the moment. Vancouver's just getting started. We'll see what happens. But that's kind of my guess at this point.
Yeah, we've had a lot of picks for a long series on our show today, so hopefully we do get that long, entertaining series between these two teams. Hey, Jason, just before we let you go, draft lottery yesterday, more of an afterthought for us here in Vancouver than we're used to.
For once,
the Sharks. Yeah, the Sharks win. Yeah.
I don't even have takes on the top 10 guys. It's such it's true. A departure.
I was trying to think, like, so who's Chicago going to draft at number 2? I'm like, I don't know.
Oh, that's that. I mean, sorry, I have enough takes for that, but usually Books will vouch for me. Usually I have like hard takes on who guys
should
should be going. I haven't done my research yet.
But Macklin Celebrini to the Sharks, what kind of impact is he going to have? I mean, we're, you know, presumptively to the Sharks, obviously, but what kind of impact is he going to have day one in that organization?
Massive, yeah. It's going to be huge. So they need it too, fellas. Half full building this year. And that hockey team, don't mistake yourself. This team is going to be bad for the next 3 years or more. Like, they're bad, but this is going to be huge. He plays the game the right way. What can I tell you? He leans complete player for me. I honestly think he's got the brain and the tools to be used in all situations. He's a buck 90. He plays quick, fast, exceptional skill, over the top compete. I mean, he does it all. So here's the thing. Not only is he going to be a positive influence on whatever happens in San Jose in the short term and the long term, I think there's a trickle-down effect. They drafted this Will Smith kid last year out of the program, who was an elite scorer who went to BC this year, obviously celebrating he was at BU, and the Sharks drafted him 4th overall last year. I'd be surprised. I mean, I've heard a lot of noise today. I'm just saying, on my side of the fence, I would be surprised not to see both those kids in Shark uniforms next year, and the Sharks starting to trend towards a new era.
Jason, great stuff as always. Always appreciate it, man, and hopefully we get the start of a really fun series between the Canucks and the Oilers tonight.
Yeah, have fun, guys. I know it's been a long time coming out there, so I'm watching with envy. It's going to be fun.
All right, that
thanks,
is
Books.
Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and a former NHL scout as well. Torn! And he picked Edmonton in 7. That's what Donnie picked too, right?
Yeah.
So picking a Canucks fans' heartbreak in Game 7 at Rogers Arena against the Oilers.
Woo! Don't love that. But, you know, 7 means it's a coin flip series. If you get to Game 7 for the Canucks as a plus 220 underdog going into the series, you take it. You take it. Like, if you get to play a Game 7, you got a shot. You're in it. And that to me is like, you know, I was looking at correct series length odds, not to do the, I guess, well, I'll save it for the whiteboard. Okay. I'll save it for the gambling odds. But I was thinking, if you'd like the Canucks to win, like 6 or 7, you can get them at 15 or 10 to 1.
Mm.
You know, and
versus just the series price.
Yeah, and not that there's no world where the Canucks steamroll the Oilers, but I do feel like late in the series where the whistles go away, that's going to be this team's best shot. If you like the Canucks to advance, why not spice up your, you know, meatball?
Well, and I have to give a shout out to your colleague and you know, cameo guy on the show here, Dom Lucision, for his big piece about the Leafs playoff struggles up at the Athletic.
Really good.
Today, really, really fascinating. One of the points he makes is that the Leafs have kind of been content to turn their playoff games into coin flips by just going into the shell and playing super low event hockey, not exploiting the offensive talent that they have. The Canucks need to do that to the Oilers. You know what I mean? If the Canucks can turn this into a coin flip series, then that's a huge advantage for them. Alfonso Davies just scored,
Canadian
by
hero.
The way, for
let's
Bayern
go.
Munich. I'm only mentioning it because it's Alfonso Davies, and we're watching it here in studio. But Alfonso Davies getting the big Champions
Off
League
a
goal.
Sick feed from Harry Kane, by the way.
Very nice. So shout out to Alfonso Davies against maybe his future team, Real Madrid. We'll see. Anyways, on that note, we will take a break. We'll do the whiteboard. All right, we'll do the whiteboard here in the next segment as Dom got in my ear there. And, of course, Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Threadco Print Shop, the Lower Mainland's choice for exceptional branded apparel, quality screen printing and embroidery crafted in their new state-of-the-art facility, threadcoprint.com. The whiteboard coming up next to your final segment of the show. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.